Good morning, everyone. So later this morning, on the floor of the House of Representatives, it might sound a little bit like this.
We, the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union, establish justice, ensure domestic tranquility, provide for the common defense,
promote the general welfare, and secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. To ordain and establish this Constitution.
So whether it's C-SPAN monotone there reading the Constitution or Captain Kirk, don't you love that? The over-the-top read there of
William Shatner.
Yeah. God, you got to love that.
Holy cow.
Mission of the House of Representatives is to frame the new session of Congress as a pullback from what the GOP campaigned on and believes were overreaches by the federal government during the last session of Congress. Hence, they're going to be reading the Constitution at the opening of the session. Is it a stunt? Or is it a signal that the House wants to do something like create an explicit constitutional test for every piece of legislation that comes to the floor? Joining us this morning is Sherrilyn Ifill, law professor at the University of Maryland, also a writer about law for TheRoot.com. Sherrilyn, good morning.
Good morning.
And also Kate Zernike, national correspondent for our partner, The New York Times, and the author of Boiling Mad, Inside Tea Party America. Kate, good morning to you.
Good morning.
So do you think, let me just start with you, Kate, do you think this is a stunt, not unlike some of the symbolic uses of the Constitution during the campaign, continuing into the House of Representatives, or something fundamentally different?
Well, I think it is something of a stunt. I think the more significant measure is that, you kind of alluded to this in your intro, they're going to require every piece of new legislation to say exactly where in the Constitution it's authorized, which is a bit more of an actual test for legislation.
As a test, though, Sherrilyn Ifill, as a law professor at the University of Maryland, does this get the cart a little bit before the horse? Isn't the House supposed to be representing the intent of the people, and that the laws are then established by what the people want, and the Supreme Court is there to determine whether it meets a constitutional test, not the House doing that for the court?
Well, of course, that's what's intriguing about all of this. I mean, if simply reading the Constitution would make all of these matters clear, you know, what is authorized by Congress, what is authorized by the federal government as opposed to the states and so forth, we wouldn't need a Supreme Court. I mean, it's great to read the Constitution. I'm a big advocate of it. And I would certainly hope that anyone elected to the Congress of the United States would have read the Constitution, in fact, presumably and hopefully before they were elected. So it's great to read it. But to begin then to suggest that Congress simply, or an individual congressperson, simply by citing the provision of the Constitution that he or she believes authorizes their legislation means that that is in fact the constitutional provision that authorizes the legislation is not exactly how it works. And so on one hand, it's always great to be mindful of the Constitution as any of the actors in our branches of government go about their duties. On the other hand, I would have to agree with Kate that it is a bit of a stunt in that it's kind of a pretense that this is somehow going to obviate the need for some of the controversial issues that have come before the Supreme Court over the course of centuries, in which people who have studied the law and the Constitution have found it difficult and have sometimes split on questions of, you know, what is the authority for various pieces of congressional legislation.
Well, let's look at some practical examples of how this might actually play out. The Commerce Clause is what's been evoked by attorneys general around the country as a reason for repealing parts of the health care plan, and that the federal government ought not to compel people as a matter of law to buy any given product unless it is explicitly involved in state-to-state, you know, interstate commerce, as the Commerce Clause says. That could apply to, cap rules on fuel economy of cars. It could apply to baby seats. It could apply to all kinds of things, don't you think?
Oh, absolutely. And the Commerce Clause has been a source of tremendous, you know, controversy and litigation. But, you know, this goes all the way back to the various items that you mentioned, but, you know, to the mandatory smallpox vaccine in 1905, which the, you know, Supreme Court said it was not unconstitutional to require individuals to take that. Much of the civil rights legislation, including Title II of the Civil Rights Act of 1964, that's the provision that keeps, you know, motels from refusing to allow blacks to stay in their establishment. The Supreme Court upheld that, you know, unanimously, 9-0, based on Congress's Commerce Clause power, that is the ability to regulate interstate commerce and those activities that substantially affect interstate commerce. And so interpreting, you know, what affects interstate commerce and what doesn't affect interstate commerce is a very tricky set of questions that the Supreme Court has dealt with for some time.
Well, I love that motel example. It's not as though the hotel industry is screaming about, you know, burdensome government intervention by being forced to admit blacks. I mean, you know, we've certainly lived with this kind of government intervention, and it's almost arbitrary to choose certain kinds of legislation to roll back. But Kate Czernicke, how much of this appears in the GOP program if you look at the campaign, and how much of this is being invented as we go along under the Boehner speakership?
Well, I think a lot of this actually was influenced by the Tea Party. The Tea Party had something before the GOP has something called its Pledge to America. But before that, the Tea Party had something that they had written called the Contract from America. Note the from. It's from the people. And their first requirement was that all legislation should say where in the Constitution it's authorized. Now, where that really gets tricky is not only in defining the Commerce Clause, but there's a lot of language in there that's broad, and that people who call themselves, you know, constitutional progressives or progressive originalists would say was left deliberately broad so that the Constitution could be interpreted over the years. For instance, the Necessary and Proper Clause, which was sometimes known as the Sweeping Clause, which was used to establish things like the central bank, which Alexander Hamilton promoted. I mean, you know, promote the general welfare of the United States. Well, a lot of people would say that health care falls under the general welfare of the United States. So it's going to be, the difficulty is going to be in interpreting this very broad language, which is, of course, what the Supreme Court has done and struggled to do over the years.
And really, there's no knowing whether this would actually sponsor more bipartisanship or this is actually designed as to kind of stick to some kind of one interpretation of the Constitution that will split the parties even more.
Well, I think there is. I think this is the sort of strict interpretation of the Constitution, the interpretation that says there are 20 things that Congress can do. That's very much a GOP thing. That will split the parties because the Democrats tend to embrace a broader vision of the Constitution.
And, you know, will it be just something more for them to argue about rather than getting down to the business of actual legislation? The rhetorical flourish begins the 112th Congress. And we're talking about it with Sherrilyn Ifill, law professor at the University of Maryland, and Kate Czernicke, national correspondent for our partner, The New York Times. Thanks to both of you.
Thank you.
On Notes from America, we have conversations with people across the country about how we can truly become the nation that we claim to be. Each week, we talk about race, our politics, education, relationships, usually all of them, because everything's connected. And you, our listeners, are at the center of those conversations. I'm Kai Wright. Join me on Notes from America, wherever you get your podcasts.